Hello, so I am Amanda Nelson, and as you will notice right away, the title on the slide is different than the title in the book, and that is because of science, and science always sends us in different directions than we anticipate. So while the main title is what we were shooting for, the secondary title is really what I'm actually going to talk about, because that's where we ended up. So first, we're going to go into some background about the main point of this project, like the reason I was hired for this project. We're going to talk a little bit about the big picture, define some terms, make sure we're on the same page. Then I'm going to talk about the plan that we had planned on doing, and then the plan that resulted from what we got from the original plan, and then the basic method, results, conclusion, typical stuff. So the ultimate project title is the parameterization and validation of APEX to support NTT nationwide deployment by the USDA. NTT is the nutrient tracking tool, and it's a user-friendly interface on the internet that basically a farmer somewhere, well, in America right now, can go onto this website, they can find their particular field, and they can enter different management or conservation practices and then get different water quality and quantity outputs and yield estimates and things like that straight from this spiffy little website. The mathematics behind it are based on the APEX model. It's the source of all the math behind it. It looks at hydrologic, plant growth, sediment, and chemical fate and transport process, and it is the scientific basis for NTT. The Agricultural Policy Environmental Extender Model, in case you're wondering what APEX stood for. So when we're talking about parameterization and validation approaches, we're talking about taking the soils files, the land use files, and the DEMs, and the climate files, or climate weather data, and putting it into ARC-APEX and building the model. And then we do sensitivity analysis to determine the most sensitive parameters, and then we run calibration process to find out what the range of the values of those sensitive parameters would be. And then we run validation, which is just running the results from the calibration through another set of measured data, against another set of measured data, to make sure that the model is actually working. And I forgot I put this slide, but here are those terms again. Calibration is adjusting the model against a set of measured data. Validation is taking what we got from that and then running it against a separate independent set of measured data. And we actually used APEX SenSun, which is a package in R created by a modeler guy that we have, our programmer, and named Mansoor Talabizi Day. And the steps it does are listed right there. I don't know. Do you want me to read them? It identifies the uncertain model parameters, and then we run the standard regression coefficient simulations, and then it runs the model with using different parameter sets to get different outputs. We ran our models about 20,000, not about, we ran it 20,000 times exactly, and then we ran the calculation sensitivity indexes, and we screened the model simulations for based on trying to find the optimum parameter values based on our set criteria that we're going to talk about. So standardized regression coefficient with the Nash Sutcliffe as our statistical performance measure were used for in the APEX SenSun. It does it automatically for us. There are about 150 input parameters in the two files that go into APEX that we were looking at. We selected a subset of 60 that relate directly to the water and nutrient budget. And then we ran the model 20,000 times within the default ranges listed in the APEX manual. So about this time last year, I gave this presentation at another conference, and it was the impact of the length of available calibration data on the APEX model parameterization on the stream flow simulation performance. And so the plan this year was to add in the nutrients into the stream flow, and that's what I was going to be talking about today. That stuff is published in JOURA this month, actually. It came out like 2 weeks ago, if you're interested in learning about how that went. And it went well. We had, thumbs up, great job. So we were like, okay, we'll just add in the nutrients and see how it goes. The calibration criteria we used last time were the statistical criteria of the Nash Sutcliffe, which looks at the actual the interannual variation along the time period, and P bias, which looks at the overall averages, compares those. We also had some soft criteria like evapotranspiration and tile drainage outputs. We had a set number target value, and then we set a range of plus or minus 15%, and we called it good. Crop yield as well, we actually had to go to about 30% plus or minus, but that's what we used as our constraints last time. And we thought, okay, well, we'll just add in the nitrogen and the phosphorus and the sediments and do the same statistical criteria, and all will be well. And then we have, for validation, we have a 35-year data set. So we went ahead and took like the first 28 years as our calibration period and then the following 6 years for validation. And we figured, you know, 35 years, that's a pretty good data set. It's daily data. We've got daily data for nitrogen, phosphorus, sediment, and water flow. So we thought we were doing pretty good. I said we were going to look at total nitrogen. In case you're wondering, we're talking about Ohio. It's northern central Seneca County, Ohio, and it actually flows north into Lake Erie. First it goes into the Sandusky River, and then it goes into Lake Erie. I've got physical description information if you're interested. But the main thing you need to know is that it's mainly agricultural, it's very flat, it's very poorly drained. Their average annual precipitation is about 970 millimeters. The 546 millimeter estimated ET value that we used as a target was from the literature. The soil is poorly drained. Basically anything that's less than 3% slope was tile drained, so this area had like 90% tile drainage, so tile drainage is a very important factor in this particular area. And then we got our Sergo soils. Our land use coverage was from Rum Confessor and Heidelberg University in Ohio, and the DEM, just the general USGS, we only use 30 meter. All of our weather is from PRISM, and that's because that's what NTT uses. I already talked about the measured data. But no model of the 20,000 met our criteria, our nutrient criteria, at all, like not even close. And I had meant to show you how bad the numbers were, but I forgot to stick it in there. So then what's the next question? Why? Why isn't it working? Why isn't this model working? It seems like everything looks great. The water looks great. What could possibly be going wrong? We thought maybe the validation years were too different than the calibration, but then we thought, well, in that 20 years or 26 year span, we have a pretty wide variety of precipitation coverage, you know. Why wouldn't the following 6 years be represented in that first 26? So we were like, maybe that's not it. Perhaps something's wrong with the measured data that we're using, but other people have used it for other studies, and it seems pretty typical for the area. Plus, they run those who gathered the data run a pretty strict QA/QC program on their data. So we're like, maybe that's not it. So maybe something's wrong with the model. Maybe something's wrong with one of the model routines. But if so, which one? Could it be a water table issue? Could it be a tile drainage issue? Could it be something wrong with like the nutrient concentration load calculations? Like, there's just so many possibilities because APEX takes so many things into account. So we decided to go ahead and look at the tile drainage, since we know that that's such an important factor in this area. And so we thought we'd just, you know, mess around with the model and see what we see, basically. So this is what we actually ended up doing in our last publication submission. First we wanted to show that we were using soft criteria for a reason. Like, there's a lot of papers out there that talk about or that just use hard statistical data and call it good. And we wanted to show that using soft criteria is a good idea. So we started out with these four different levels of calibration validation scenarios. We have A through D. And the first one was flow stats only, that's it, period. And then the second was flow stats plus some of the soft criteria. And when I'm saying soft criteria, I mean the water, the additional water budget stuff, the ET, the drainage, and then the crop yields. C has the flow and nutrient stats only, and then D has everything, including, we actually have numbers or evidence that from Kevin King that says that about 50% of the total phosphorus comes from the drainage itself, so we figured we could check that ratio too to see if it shows us anything. And then we went ahead and ran all of these scenarios with and without tile drainage to check out what was going on. So this is just what I just said in table form, if you are more of a table viewer. I won't repeat it. I already said it. So the number of models that met the criteria decreased as the criteria number increased, which makes sense. As you narrow your criteria, you get narrower results, right? So that was good. Nash Sutcliffe values were higher for stream flow than for nutrients, which is typical. Again, most papers find that, or most studies find that. And they were higher during calibration than during validation, which makes sense because that's what you're calibrating for, is the calibration period. When soft data were used to constrain the model, the Nash Sutcliffe values decreased for all the components. And this isn't a surprise, but we also think it's kind of good, too. Siebert and McDonald talked about getting less right results for the right reasons. And we kind of like that concept because it means that even though your stats aren't the best they could possibly be, like you don't have the highest Nash you could possibly have, you know, you have confidence in your ET and your drainage values and crop yields, because a lot of people run these models just, you know, to find crop yields. You want to know that you can be confident in them. Overall model performance decreased with the introduction of the soft data based. That's the same sentence. All right, so we went ahead and picked the same or the best fit model for each one and ran it with and without tile drainage. I'm just going to jump ahead because that's the best part, I think. So as you can see on the top, we have tile drainage and without tile drainage. You'll notice that our target tile drainage was 243 plus or minus 15%. So you'll notice that scenarios A and C are pretty far off because that wasn't used as a constraint in those scenarios. You'll notice also that the ET is actually similar when you run it with and without tile drainage, right? No change in ET. And there's also no change in surface runoff. So that started getting us wondering, where's the water going? You know, if I'm taking out from 185 to 240 millimeters, it's got to be going somewhere. Stream flow, oh, there's that amount, is a little different, but it's still definitely not equaling the drainage that we took out. So there's definitely something missing in the model that we're not exactly sure what's going on there. And then also the other thing that was really odd to us is that the with and without tile drainage crop yields are the exact same. And if there's no change in your crop yields with and without tile drainage, why would people be spending thousands and thousands of dollars putting tile drainage in? You know, it's not adding up. So we know that there are some things that need further examination. So for all the scenarios, the nitrogen and phosphorus values were drastically reduced when it was run without tile drainage, which makes sense because we know the nutrients are within or come out within the tile. And there were hardly any tile drainage impacts on ET, surface runoff, and crop yields for the calibration and validation scenarios. And this indicates that there's something going on with either the tile drainage routines or maybe the water table and maybe the crop routines or maybe all of the above. And in case you're wondering, I'm not, like, trying to trash APEX or anything. All models have issues. And we aren't even the first people who've shown this as a problem. Gassman et al. In 2010 pointed out that they're actually working on a new water table system and a new subsurface tile drainage system. But as far as we can tell, that has not been fixed. And with that, are there any questions? You have like 20 seconds.
Yeah, we're just about out of time, so if you guys want to get one quick question, we can
hold it. Oh, you do? Yeah.
How big was that watershed? Like, treatment?
How big?
Yeah, or is less than
that? It's 90 hectares, I think is what we decided. Yeah. It's around 90 hectares.
Thank you, Amanda.
Thank you.